Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Volume 11. I'm João Vilela, and today we have a very honorable guest, Ron Bumblefoot Thal. Is that how you pronounce it, right? I think I got it.
That's how you pronounce it.
That's how I pronounce it. That's great. So I already butchered the name.
All good.
And he's a great guitarist. I'm going to do a very brief introduction for those that don't know him yet. He's a great guitarist. He's a great singer. He's a great producer. He has many, like, super well-made projects that we're going to talk about in this podcast. And Ron, it's an honor having you here. Thank you for accepting the invitation. First, to have a little chat.
Thank you. Muito obrigado.
Ah, muito obrigado. And because you started on the Portuguese, you have some involvement with the Brazilian people, with the Portuguese-speaking people. I want to know where that started from, because you're involved with so many of our people. You're involved and the Angraverse, right? The band Angra. Mm-hmm. The Angraverse, I heard that Marcelo Barbosa, he's my teacher, right? My guitar teacher, and you suggested him to go to Guns N' Roses after you, to replace you, and then you got involved on Sons of Apollo with Felipe Andreoli, and then you're involved with the whole Whom Gods Destroy with Bruno Valverde. So the whole Angraverse is rotating around you, and yes, you're also rotating around the Angraverse. So yes. How did that come to be?
Just in the rock and metal world, everybody is just one degree of separation away from each other.
True.
And we all just know each other or know of each other or are working with someone that worked with the other one. And so, yeah. And plus, Angra is just such a great fucking band. You know, everybody knows that band and respects everybody who has been in the Angraverse. Absolutely, best of the best.
Do you have any specific observation about your preferences around the band, or just the whole discography as a whole? What caught your attention to want to get closer to those guys? Because of course you heard of them here and there, but what made you like actually get in close touch with them to do projects with them and so on?
It just happened.
Really?
Like, it wasn't anything. Like, you know, they're all fantastic. And every single one of them that I've ever met have just been like the sweetest people. That's it.
Are you sure it's not because you're such a sweet guy that you make other people sweet as well?
No, I'm a big fucking asshole. No.
Oh, that's great.
No, if anything, it's the other way around. Like, I tend to, I think I've gotten better at it, but for most of my life, I really feel other people's feelings. And, you know, if they're down, I feel down. If they're, you know, if they're up, I feel up. Like, I feel what they feel a lot.
Okay.
I've tried to be more stable later in life, and maybe be the one that keeps others stable.
I see.
But it takes a long time to get to that kind of place.
I see. And what would you say, where would you say that took you? Because of that kind of, like, to the wildest adventures, or maybe you wanted to have something more stable in your career as well, because you're like that as a person. Did that affect you in any way, professionally speaking?
I don't know. It's just part of who you are. You're on your own roller coaster, and you're just always on it and always riding it. And, you know, when it's like this, you're like this. And when it's like this, you're like this. And you just... Yeah, I guess you just roll with whatever.
Yeah.
When the shit is crazy, you're just rolling with it. When it's smooth, you're rolling with it. For me, I don't mind things being crazy and chaotic as long as I am in the trenches with good people. That's the thing that matters. Like, that's really what's most important.
Yeah.
If you're doing something smooth and easy with assholes, you're gonna hate it.
It's worse, right?
If you're doing something crazy with people that you really love being with, and you have each other's back, then it's an adventure. It's not something bad, you know. So it really boils, for me, it boils down to that. I don't care how people play. I care who they are.
That is so cool.
That's what matters to me.
Yeah, and so let's get into the projects, the musical projects. because you have so many different environments, because you're playing a specific kind of music with a specific kind of people, you're dealing with people from all over the world, you're also all over the world many times of the year. So how would you say the band develops? Is a specific project of yours going in a specific pace because the members of that band wanted to go in that specific place? How do you deal, and what's the best part about each project? How would you say every part of your musical project goes by? What's the pacing? What's the environment like? How are the people like?
Each one is different. There was a different marriage.
Yeah.
So let's say Art of Anarchy. You know, it was great to be making music with Jeff again, with Jeff Scott Soto.
Yes.
So being in a band with him again is wonderful. Out of, you know, when Sons of Apollo deteriorated, that we have that together. And the Voda brothers, John and Vince, they're twin brothers, guitarist and drummer, and I've known them since they were teenagers over 25 years. So, like, we were just hanging yesterday, eating a whole bunch of chicken parmesan and jamming, and yeah, they're...
So they have their own chemistry,
a long time,
right?
Part of my life. So there's that kind of thing. And then you have Whom Gods Destroy, where out of Sons of Apollo, Derek and I continued making music the way we did in Sons of Apollo, just sending ideas back and forth and building on them and doing that. Yeah. And then just the way that one degree of separation everybody has, how that band came together, where back to a little touch of the Angraverse during the pandemic, 2020, it really goes back to that. We started, Sons of Apollo was doing a European tour. And after four shows, we had to pull the plug and get home and lock down everything.
Yeah.
And for the next year, everyone's just making their little pandemic videos of jamming with people and all that stuff. And yeah, those videos. So I quickly busted out a song that I had an idea for that I had never finished, and suddenly we all have this time on our hands that we could do all the things we never have time to do because we're just constantly running and running and running. So the first thing I did is I finished up the song and called it Planetary Lockdown, because that's song wouldn't have happened without it. So did that, and I had my drummer Kyle Hughes, fantastic drummer, he's from the UK, and he's been my drummer since 2017, just phenomenal. Or is it actually longer? Shit, no, 2015. Yeah, almost 10 years, my God. So, and part of the one degree of separation, now everyone's connected. He's now doing stuff with Richie Kotzen, and he played, we did a version of that Planetary Lockdown song, and now Bruno played with, yes, also Richie Kotzen.
Yes.
So there you go, the one degree of Richie Kotzen, that happens. And so I put out the song, and then just for fun, I did one where I took out the guitar solos and left it open so other people could jam to it.
Yes.
Like a jam along kind of thing. And almost 500 people did it. It was guitar players, bass players, drummers, singers, horn players, violinists, things I was not expecting. Yeah, a flute player. Like, oh, I was surprised. And it was great to see so many different people all just having fun with this and getting to know each other also. So yes, many of the musicians that did it, we all exposed each other to each other. Not literally, musically. And well, maybe some... Literally, I don't know, but
we don't want to get into that, right?
No. That's, you know, consenting adults and all. So anyway, back to this, now that I've totally derailed my train of thought. So one of them that we did was Kyle on drums, Felipe, Angraverse Felipe on bass.
Yes.
And Dino Jalusic on vocals.
Yes.
And he made up words to the song and lyric and melody, and we made a little song out of it called Back on My Feet, That's just a 1 minute piece of this song. And so there's that. And Dino started making music during the pandemic with Yaz. They were working together, who is a phenomenal guitar player, but he's also an incredible bass player. And so he's playing guitar with Dino, and then he joins, after Dino joins Sons of Apollo, he joins as our bass player.
Oh, that's where he came
and
from.
And that was not even the Dino connection. It was that just Derek was scoping the internet and found this incredible, you know, and he's like, my God, this guy is amazing. Do you play bass? And he sure does, and very well, and very authentically.
Yeah.
So then we have that. Sons of Apollo, we do our final tour, and Felipe is on bass for us. And yeah, and also Derek, Yaz, and Bruno, I think they all live near each other. Mm. And Bruno was also on Derek's radar, and Dino's as well. I think it was Dino that said, you know, Bruno is the guy that has to be for this. And it just came together that way. Everybody just knows each other, is connected to each other somehow. And bands come together in a very simple way. You just reach out to the person, say, hey, want to play in a band? And they say, okay.
Sure.
I say, nah, I can't, I'm busy.
And the natural, I don't know if you have the same impression as I do, the ones that come up most naturally just by, oh, I know a cool guy that might fit in our project, those are the ones that tend to be the less bureaucratic, right? Instead of the Hopefully. Ones that are like, oh, I want that guy, I want to create a project to go on. I don't know. I don't even know how people in the rock universe can still come up with those ideas, but believe me, some still do. I want to go to the mainstream and tour all around the world. So who's the guy that will bring me the most eyeballs and has the most followers and the guy that, you know, that's what I think. Is unfortunately something you were saying earlier. You have more pleasure playing with people that are good guys, that are good personalities, than guys that are like virtuosos or whatever it may be, because that's where the band lasts, right? That's where the band chemistry can be fun for you to tour with guys you have a good time with, even if it's a roller coaster, rather than a calm, like a calm sea where it's with people you don't want to be with, right?
Yeah.
Simply put.
Yeah. For me, it's, I don't give a shit about the popularity contest.
Yeah.
If I did, I wouldn't have called myself Bumblefoot. I wouldn't have this thing hanging on my fucking chin.
Come on, man. That's your marketing. Yeah. That's your identity. That's your. if you cut that, people are gonna be like, "Wait, who's that guy? I've never seen him before."
Yeah, keep it all rolled up in a ball, and then it's longer than the screen. It's a whole lot of beard. Yeah.
It's great. Yeah,
it happens as you get older. You end up with more hair on the bottom of your skull than the top. This happens over time. And it tends to change color differently from the top. Yeah. So like this thing turns white and this is still kind of brownish. Yeah. Life's weird. It's kind of fun watching the weird shit happen.
So by the way.
Anyway, yeah, back to music and bands and all that. Away from beards and back to bands. So what were we talking about?
How things develop in terms of connections, in terms of people you have around in your bands and your projects, how it happened to be, and kind of like that.
It's best when it's natural and it's just, you just reach out to somebody, person to person. Anytime it's happened where it was like, all right, our manager is going to reach out to their manager and put this together, it just... Yeah.
It's kind of like a culture clash, right?
You need to get a feel for the person. Like, this person is going to be in your life a lot. You have to make sure that you can stand this person and not want to kill them. So, that's very important.
Yeah.
So, pretty much every band that I've ever been in was that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even bigger bands. Like, someone from the band just reached out and said, hey,
Want to hop in? Yeah. I want to ask you a question about Whom Gods Destroy that is, looking from the outside, kind of the impression we have, but maybe because you're a part of it, you're like in the front of it, you can have your perspective to say if it's like that or not. Is it in a way kind of a continuation of Sons of Apollo?
Pretty much. It is and it isn't. Derek and I, look, there's no denying that Derek and I were in Sons of Apollo and we wrote the music. So when we're writing music for this, it's like a continuation, working together in the same style of music.
Yeah.
To me, it's just Whom Gods Destroy is just turning up the intensity in every aspect of it, which is what I always wanted for Sons of Apollo. Like, if it was a workout at the gym, you could say that Sons of Apollo was a jog on the treadmill, and I wanted to sweat more. I was pushed to sweat more. And now we're doing that, which I'm happy about. You know, yeah. The heavy shit is heavier, the crazy shit is crazier, and it's just more intense. I like intensity.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
And we are lucky, you know, to have a team of people that are into that, and that pull that off and make it even more so. You know, if Bruno wasn't drumming, this band would not have the intensity it has.
Yeah.
If Yaz wasn't such a motherfucker, it wouldn't be that. if Dino didn't give it everything he gives it the way he does, it just, it would be tired, and it would be, it just, and it's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm quite happy with, yeah.
That's great. That's great. So because you're liking the aesthetic of Whom Gods Destroy, where you can be more aggressive, you can be more you can make something heavy, even more extreme. Would you say your solo career was an adventure of yours, of doing everything you weren't able to do while you were in other bands because you had to share the creative direction with the other guys?
Well, when it started, I never wanted to, like, form an external band. Like, from the age of 6, I always had my own band and wrote my own music and played with people. It's not that I wanted to be a solo artist, but I just kind of had my core band and was never one to accept an invitation to join someone else's band or anything like that with people I was unfamiliar with or anything like that. Guns was the first. Before that, you know, my dude. Yeah.
If you want to brag, before you just turn around to someone and you're like, oh, I never joined a band. And then these guys like Guns N' Roses. Yeah, you know, have you heard of them? And they invited me for their thing. So I was like, yeah, sure, why not? That was my first band.
Yeah, before that, like, I played with a lot of different people and was guests with things and did all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
But as far as being a member of someone else's band, I always stayed on my own path. And I have, you know, my own albums, and everything was, you know, before that was just going up and up and up and up and up. Then I joined someone else's band. And it was definitely a different beast. So from there, I did continue doing my own thing and making my own music. And from there, any other band I was in was one where I was a founding member also and wrote, and it was the real deal. You know, everybody was creating and recording and part of what it is, not just...
Yeah.
Like
an actual band, right? Something you do want to be real. You do want to actually make the music.
Yeah. I mean, I did with the band Asia. I went out and did a tour with them, which was wonderful. And they're just such great guys and great songs. And it was a lot of fun. But that was not something where it's like, okay, I am the new member of Asia and we're going to play together for the next 20 years and put out albums. It wasn't that. It was more of a tribute and a celebration of the recently lost John Wetton. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I see. So you knew ever since you entered it that it was not something that was even supposed to last, right? It wasn't a surprise when you exited the project, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't even a real exit. It was the pandemic hit.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We toured summer of 2019.
True.
And then after a few years, there was a tour planned, and I was going to be singing again for it. But it conflicted with the South American tour that Sons of Apollo was doing. So they were getting somebody else. And that tour never even happened for them.
Oh, really?
And yeah. So I don't know if they're, yeah. I don't know where that is now, like what the status of it is. I mean, I wish everybody a happy birthday on their birthdays. And
wish them well.
Yeah, like Jeff Downs was in the Bahamas while I was, so I reached out to him, but he was on a different island. And yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff. So, yeah. But, yeah, that's it. It was...
So because
other than that, it's just making my own music and making music collaborating with other people. And one thing that I always say is one band can't be everything for you. If you're in a 5-member band, that means that only one out of 5 things you want should go through.
True.
Otherwise, it's not equal.
True.
Four, you have to be okay with having 4 out of 5 of your wants shot down.
Yeah.
And if you're not cool with that, go do a solo album. And that's what solo music is for. You get to fully express every aspect of yourself 100%, which is great to do. But when you work with a band, they are contributing things to the music that you can't. That you would never think of. They have abilities you don't have.
True.
And it becomes greater than something you could just do yourself.
True.
Or at least different. It's, think of it like if each band member is a spice.
And salt, you know a lot pepper, about that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Different types of peppers. Salt, pepper, another pepper, and a different kind of pepper. And yeah, like you could be, you know, you could make a great... you know, one spice meal.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll be your solo thing. But nothing will compare to having 5 spices in that dish. It's going to give it a flavor that is its own.
Yeah.
Really, everything is its own because every person is their own. So you have a sound. I have a sound. Every single person has a sound. And if you do a solo album, it's going to be that sound. And if you do a band, it's going to be a combination of people with their sounds. And it makes every band unique. And that's what's great about bands.
Yep.
Every single one is unique. No two are the same.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask a spicy question. If you were to mm-hmm. only choose one for the rest of your life, solo career or a band?
So right now, where my heart is really at, what I love the most and what I want my future to be, is producing and
okay.
teaching. I always, from the very beginning, that was my favorite part of making music, is being in the studio and making the impossible happen and working with people where I help them, you know, make their dream happen of their music. And that's what I love the most. 20 years ago, I was an adjunct professor at a New York State college teaching music production. I have this room that we're in right now where record lots of bands and sitting in this chair where I lay lots of guitar solos and mix lots of albums, and I love doing that. After decades of being on the field, I want to be a coach and I want to help other people get onto the field and do things the best they can and be part of their musical journey. And guide them with all the stupid mistakes I made that they can learn from and whatever it is. But that's what I love. And there's a lot of cool artists, new artists that I've worked with that are just fantastic. And honestly, I get more excited about that than my own music. I feel like I've done it all.
Okay.
And I just, like, my dream in life is to sit quietly under a palm tree eating a coconut. That's what I dream about, not being on stage. Yeah. When I was 6 years old, I dreamt about being on stage. Now, my dream is
<stage. laughs>
to help other people that are dreaming about being on stage, and for me to just quietly eat a coconut.
Okay.
That's all I want out of life now, a coconut.
Okay. So, doing some background research, then I gotta ask you, how did the big stages and the big audiences and the stadiums made you feel? Because on your YouTube channel, you can see various posts of the audience, I think from your Guns N' Roses era, where you would regularly post people cheering and stuff like that. So how did that make you feel at the time? And how do you look back at it, since that's not what you want today?
I've spoken to a lot of different musicians about what I'm about to say, and a lot of them have felt the same way, that they prefer small shows where it's personal.
Okay.
And they feel almost disconnected, two-dimensional, when they're on a giant stage and you can't look in the eyes of the people. So in one way, it's great where you're making so many people happy at once, hopefully. But for you personally, it's, you feel more like you're there when you're just face to face with people.
Yeah.
And it's just something more personal and intimate. And a lot of people I know, they like that better for themselves. Like, they get more out of it than being on a big stage. And yeah, I did it with Guns, I did it with Sons of Apollo, playing like Hellfest and different festivals and things. Even on my own, I've played a bunch of festivals doing solo shit. You know, five digits of people and stuff. So in the end, what I prefer most is just sitting in a chair with a guitar and talking to people and being able to joke and having it be loose and interactive. And feel like we're all there. It's not that, you know, I'm just entertaining you. It's like we're part of this whole thing equally.
Yeah. We're going together along the way, right? Rather than a one-way street where you're just the one giving, the other guy is the only one receiving. And
sort of like that, yeah. Like, just, you know, it's a selfish thing, I guess. But for me, like, if it's just going to be what I prefer, if I'm thinking of the audience, you know, it's like, you know, give them the big show, give them everything they want to see, give them something they'll never forget. But sometimes it's the personal thing that they never forget. And their favorite show is the one where they can just talk back and forth in a show. For me, that's what I like more.
Yeah.
When it's a more personal event.
And that's where the true, like, the real connection actually happens, right? Because people can end up having a parasocial relationship with you if they see you, like, up on stage and they're like, holy crap, I saw Bumblefoot. He looked me in the eye. And the person will think they're closer to you than they actually are, because you probably didn't even see the person, if we're being honest. But if you have the smaller venue ambience, and we have the meet and greet afterwards, where you can talk directly to the person and be like, oh, how was the show? You liked it? And any observations? Oh, and then the person will tell a personal story of theirs, and you're able to have the exchange. Definitely the connection is more real, right?
Yeah.
And would you say, by the way, that is something that you had the biggest change in terms of expectations pre and post Guns N' Roses, like after you had that specific experience where you were pretty much forced, let's say, to play in that huge ambience until you said, no, that's enough for me. And then you kind of found your direction after having been through that. Because if you had never been through that, maybe you'd have in your back of the mind, your mind, like, wow, if one day I manage to get there, it might actually be what I want, right? But then sooner, like much sooner, you realized it wasn't your jam, right?
Well, it was even before Guns that I was starting to experience it. Like, Joe Satriani in 2004 brought me on stage as a guest to play at PNC Arts Center here in New Jersey, which is like a big, like, what is it, like 13,000 people, something like that.
But that was enough for you to already realize that? You already had that feeling from there?
There are some musicians, or I should say there are some people, that gauge their worth by the size of the audience. Yeah. And if only 100 people are at the show, they feel like a failure. And if there's 10,000 people at the show, they feel like a success. Yeah. And I'm not one of those people. I've played with those people. It pains in the ass. but I am not that way. And I guess the more you do it, the more you realize who you are when you're in enough situations and you can reflect on them after.
Yeah. And be absolutely sure about it. Not just wonder about it because you actually have the experience to prove that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know.
You know. You
it's
know.
Like when William Shatner went to space. He was surprised by the feeling that he felt so almost, I wouldn't say disappointed, but just like alone and empty. And it's like, there's nothing out here.
Yeah.
Everything is back on Earth. Yeah.
I love the analogy.
It's like those realizations that you get that you don't know until you experience it. You have to experience it. And then you see if it's you or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or just how you feel about it. Yeah.
Yeah, that is great. That is great. I think to wrap up and talk a little bit about your musical side, your musical personality, some things that many people are really curious, including myself, by the way, is how did you become the experimentalist guitarist in terms of like different sounds, different scales, fretless? You're kind of like a crazy scientist kind of guy where you're trying all the unconventional stuff until you find something that hits, that you identify with it, and then you go deep. You don't hesitate into putting that into your own work, into putting that into your own sound. So how did that come to be? Were you always experimenting, and what story would you tell about that?
I was a weird kid. And for me, as a kid, my favorite thing was learning. I was a sponge for just anything about everything. And I remember at 7 years old, taping a bunch of pieces of paper together, like this big, and building, trying to design a spaceship, and like where all the rooms were and everything. And I was just studying about the solar system and history and just everything about human existence and experience as a kid, as a very young kid. And I was into art and sculpting and painting and drawing and just tried to memorize and retain as much as I could in my brain about everything there was. And I guess doing all of that, I don't know if it made me more of an introvert that thrived more when I was just in an uninterrupted environment, or if I just already was that, and that's why I chose to do those things instead of playing football.
It's a correlation or causation kind of thing
with my
right?
friends. So when I got into music, I really loved the academics of it, besides playing. The mathematics that made it tick, you know, that made it what it was, you know, what is God's math? what is the coding that he used? and just learning about that stuff. And yeah, just then when it started getting toward music, and seeing the things Eddie Van Halen would do. Oh yeah, I dip my pickups in wax to do this. So I started experimenting with making weird guitars and would build my own horrible, strange guitars. Really weird.
Not the Frankenstrat, but a kind of Frankenstein, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I did have a Strat that I turned into like a double neck. And
of course you did.
I had another one.
Of course you did.
That I made. And I used a bass neck that I cut down to like a short length and fretted it twice as close. So it was, I used a neck of an instrument that's an octave lower and refretted it to be an octave higher in its distance and intonation and everything. So I had a high octave little guitar neck out of the bottom horn of the Stratocaster. It was the weirdest guitar. And I did do shows with it when I was a teenager, and it was a strange guitar. I made sort of a fretless where I pulled all the frets off this guitar and covered it with coins and shaved the edges and had a surface of coins that I played on. So like a metal fretless that I had back then. And these things were terrible. They were absolutely awful. They were my malformed, dysfunctional babies. And, so I had a bit of a sense of humor about me, a way to balance the darknesses of life. And when it came to just making music, it would start to come out. You know, I wasn't trying to write pop songs or, you know, catchy songs. I was writing songs that expressed all the weird shit that I thought and felt. And that's just always what I did. And that was my goal, is to make music that was genuine and authentic, whether 10 people like it or 10 million. That's not up to me. That's not something I have control over. So all you could do is just do what's legit, and the world decides from there. And whatever it is, it is. And if people don't like it, maybe after you die, it'll become the new anthem of humanity. Who the hell knows? You don't know. The only thing you have control over is doing your best and digging deepest and putting music into the world that is genuine, where I guess in a way you live on through that music. And that's what I always did.
Yeah.
So for better or worse, you know, at least I was legit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't even think, in my opinion, it's like an at least kind of perspective. It's like, I'm proud to do that. You know, it's like if there was one thing I could do where absolutely nothing could stop me, it would be I was legit. You know, I did my thing. I think that's something to be much more proud than to go to a place where you don't want to go, because if you end up going there, you're going to want to go back, and that's going to take more work than if since the beginning you were the guy that followed your own path, right? And I feel like...
And that's also the challenge being in a band, is that if you're working with people that have a different vision than you, and then you start tapping into that whole, I'm not being legit. just as long as your part is... Let it be what it's going to be and roll with it, and don't try and stop it from becoming something. Just calm the fuck down. It's just a song. It's just, don't worry about it. Just see where it's going to go.
From a guy that has had a lot of experience in a lot of bands, that's a great advice. Calm the fuck down.
Yeah. It's like, it's really not that important. You know, if you're going to die in 5 minutes, the last thing you'd give a shit about is... you know, the arrangement of that song. So think of it that way. It's like, and probably whatever idea you hung up on a year from now, you won't even remember that idea. And the other person's idea was much better.
True.
And you were just so used to hearing your own idea that you couldn't imagine anything else being there. So calm the fuck down and just, you know, just see where it goes. Just don't be so afraid. Just drive on a road without a map and see where it leads you. That's all.
So, Ron, it was a blast having a talk with you. Such a nice interview. So, you're such a nice and funny guy. So that was great to have something new. And would you like? And please, if you'd like, leave us and the people that are watching any final messages, your socials, where people can find you, anything you'd like to promote.
Oh, yeah.
That's coming up, right? There's something coming up that I feel like it would be great, and something that is already released that you might also want to talk about. So the stage is yours. The stage in a small venue, so you can be more comfortable.
See, this is the perfect venue because we could just talk.
Yeah.
So, what can I say? Thank you for coming along for the ride for all these years, decades, or however long it's been, days, minutes. Yes, I hope you enjoy the music I've made, and for a lot of you that have sent me your music, I've enjoyed a lot of that too. I thank you. And social media, just look up Bumblefoot and you'll find me. You're either going to find a chicken's foot with a big wart in the middle on Google, or you're going to find me. And I know sometimes it might be hard to tell the difference, but yeah, I'm the one with the big thing in the middle of the face, and the other one is, yeah. So anyway, yes, at Bumblefoot, BUMBLEFOOT, and yeah, I got my band Art of Anarchy. Most of that stuff is Art of Anarchy Band. For Whom Gods Destroy, WG Destroy. Look up that hashtag, that, what do you call it? That handle on anything. And that's where you will find the band, WG Destroy. Yeah. On the Instagrams, the Facebooks, Twitters, Ticks and Talks, and Threads, and whatever the fuck else. I don't know.
Yeah.
I got to check. But anyway, yeah. So that's it. What the hell? I'm just babbling nonsense right now. So anyway, thank you all for watching, and thank you for having me on. And that's it. Hopefully I'll see you in your neck of the woods at some point.
Yep. When you come to Brazil, when I go to a place you're touring at or something like that, we'll meet. And
beautiful.
If you guys are inspired by this interview, you can listen to Art of Anarchy that already has released one of their works. And Whom Gods Destroy is going to be out in March 2014.
March 15th, the album comes out. Yeah.
There you go. So we'll have this interview lined up right before, so people can also be very interested in that. You guys can follow me at Vilela Volume 11 and Instagram, and sub to the channel and do all the good stuff that is going to help the algorithm like me. So Ron, thank you so much. It was an honor talking to you, and stay tuned for the next episode of Volume 11. Bye bye.